This is the Education Gadfly Show.
What is it? It's like everybody thinks it's so great, when really it was a big mistake. I'm working on it here.
Are we going to cut this?
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, the Beyonce of Education Policy, Andy Smerick.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back. It's been way too long.
It has been way too long. And the Beyonce, you know why? You know, so she dropped this album. You know, nobody saw it coming, right? This is like your analysis of the Nape Tuda, Andy. Nobody saw it coming out of nowhere. You dropped this incredible analysis this week. It was almost like you had a sneak peek at the data.
No comment. No. Thank you for your kind words about that. I wish I had made millions of dollars off of my Nape Tuda like she's going to, but it was an interesting day yesterday.
I think that the lesson here, Andy, is that first of all, you should have put your analysis on iTunes and you needed to have a video version of it.
And maybe I could get Jay-Z to do like a rap somewhere.
Yeah, the rap. Yes. What could you say? What is the rap? We're going to talk about Tudor later, right? We're going to talk about this.
But
you know what is it? It's like everybody thinks it's so great, when really it was a big mistake. I'm working on it here.
Are we going to cut this?
No, that was good stuff. I did that on the fly, Andy. Yeah. That's raw talent, my friend.
Okay.
All right. Hey, it is the holidays. People are getting ready to take off. Maybe you're listening to this while you're driving somewhere to see your family or friends for the holidays. Let's hope.
So, hadn't even considered that.
We are going to bring it. By the way, we are not in the dentist with a drill behind us, but there is work going on in our building where they are drilling and hammering into the masonry, which, by the way, has not been good for the sort of productivity of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute as this is going on.
You know,
on.
Bellwether has gone through the same thing. They have built a new restaurant underneath of us, I think the Fainting Goat or something, and for the past couple months we have had to deal with the drilling and pounding. Oh, yes. It's been awful.
I tell you, it's tough. I mean, I know, you know, sure, teachers out there, you know, have to deal with, you know, violent classrooms, you know, challenging, you know, micromanagement, all that kind of stuff.
But hey, us, we suffer.
We suffer too in the think tanks. You know, we got people drilling on our work out here in downtown D.C. All right. What's going on, Pamela? Let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Earlier this week, the New York Times published an editorial on gifted education, noting that even our best students were in the middle of the pack in the recently released PISA scores, and that our younger kids score higher on global comparisons than our older kids, suggesting a failure to nurture high flyers as they progress through their education. How can we better serve gifted kids?
Better question. How did the New York Times get so full of common sense? This is remarkable. I mean, I'm like, what? This was the New York Times? It was great, right?
It was, and they've been following the gifted and talented program in the city pretty well for quite some time, but I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, no, this was very solid. And look, I wish that, I'll be honest, we've done a lot of work here at Fordham on gifted and talented. You've written a book now on this for the Philanthropy Roundtable. Excellent book. It is hard to get people interested in this topic, funders, other policy wonks on the left or right. Nobody seems to care about our high achieving kids. Why is that? What can we do about it?
So I wrote this blog piece after writing the book, just saying how discouraged I was by the entire couple month process of trying to study gifted education. And it just feels like in America, we like the idea of bootstrapping. We like the underdog. And there's something about our Americanness, I think, that has people saying, you know, these kids are gifted. They already have like lots of benefits. We don't need to do that much for them. And it's a shame. The country loses out because of the attitude.
You know, I know on the left, there's been this sense that at times gifted education has been a way for white parents or upper middle class parents to shelter their kids from poor minority kids. And that has happened in some of the more diverse school districts around. On the other hand, look, I mean, no matter what your race or what's your income, if you've got a child who is sitting in class bored because they already know the material, that's a problem, you know, and they deserve to be challenged. Every kid deserves to learn something new every day.
Yes. And the one good news piece out of this is it seems like, although pundits don't care as much about this, that like families, parents, districts seem to care. I've gotten a lot of feedback on this, the gifted book for from Philanthropy Roundtable, just from random folks about how much they care about this and anecdotes about their own kids. So I hope we can get some traction.
That sounds good. You know, even these people drilling on our office seemed not to care, Andy. I feel like if they cared, they would give it a break.
They're aligned against us.
All right. Topic number two, Pamela.
Mike, you wrote an article for Education Next about the potential of self-driving cars, like those under development by Google, to make life more convenient for adolescents and their parents. Andy, would you let your Google car drive your kid to soccer practice?
Mike, you have got to explain your reasoning behind this. I'm trying to give you the benefit of the doubt, man.
What? Andy, this is coming. By the time our kids are teenagers, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine they're 13, 14, 15. This could be a real possibility that we could have a car that could drive them around. Okay. And the question is, you know, let's say, I mean, obviously you've got young kids. I've got young kids. We're not going to put our 3-year-old in a car without an adult, right? Would you put your 14-year-old in a car without an adult if the cars and the car was programmed by you to take them to soccer practice and drop them off? I think the answer, in my view, is yes, people are going to do this. I mean, people would put their 14-year-old on a city bus or on the metro to go somewhere. So why not?
You know what? On 60 Minutes a couple weeks ago, I saw that Amazon is test piloting, no pun intended, like actual, like these mini helicopters.
The drones.
Yeah, drones to deliver packages. Yeah. And I was so blown away by that. And like, I think I'm sort of like a Luddite. I'm too conservative. I don't like progress. And so I just sort of like shook my head at that. This idea of like drones for our kids, driving them to school. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'm old school.
Look, the point here is that this is going to totally transform adolescence, okay? Because what it means is, first of all, if you talk to parents who have, you know, tweens or teenage kids, they complain all the time that all they do is drive their kids around.
That's right.
Right? Now, some of that could be good bonding time. Mm-hmm. Could be. Right. Not sure if it actually is, but could be.
We could study that.
All right. But still, it's kind of like these parents are like, oh, my God, I'm just so tired of driving my kids around. I'm so happy when they finally turn 16. Right. Yep. Now, if you live in the city again or a place where there's a lot of public transportation, you know, those younger kids already have some freedom because, frankly, kids can handle independence long before they can handle driving. Okay, here's the other thing, Andy.
I can't believe we're talking about
once
this.
Once we don't... Andy, this is a big deal. Once
this is like the Jetsons. Listen, this is like a cartoon.
Once kids don't need to drive, okay, because the car can drive for them, you can also say, you know what? We don't really need to have 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds behind a wheel because they're terrible at it, right? So you could raise the driving age to, say, 21. And, you know, the self, you know, the manual driving age. Once you do that, you also say, well, you know, if teenagers are no longer driving, do we really need a drinking age anymore?
Question number three.
All right, Andy. But look, we've got about 10 years to keep asking these questions. I'm not letting you off the hook that easily, my friend.
I'm surprised that you're so fired up about this.
Well, it's just your lack of imagination. I
think that's
Andy.
It.
All right. Topic number three.
We're going to discuss yesterday's 2013 NEAP TUDA data release during Amber's Research Minute. But for now, let's talk about one of the biggest stories to emerge, the statistically significant gains made by the District of Columbia Public Schools. But this morning, Andy painted a gloomy picture of DC scores. What's up?
By the way, Andy, you're all gloom all the time.
No,
you're discouraged by this, discouraged by that. You know, they have medications available out there for this sort of thing.
No, I'm just so tired of the cheerleading for cheerleading's sake, like the Broad Prize, giving an award to Houston for getting like 1 in 10 of their black kids in eighth grade able to read, and the celebration for like the results yesterday. Yes, we should be happy about progress, but our hearts should break. Like, why was there nowhere in any of the NCES or NAGB data telling us that 3% of African-American kids in eighth grade in Detroit are proficient in math?
Well, where'd that come from? 3%? You must have found that. There must have been in the data somewhere, right?
Buried,
they didn't play it up.
Buried in a spreadsheet, 4% in Milwaukee. Hockey, these gains in DC, God bless them for working hard. But even like the gains that they made, I think in eighth grade reading, where it was statistically significant, it got them all the way up to 9% of their boys and girls proficient. I am not going to celebrate when less than 1 in 10 of kids are prepared for post-secondary work.
All right. So let me push back on this. Of course, we've had this ongoing debate about proficiency versus growth, right? We know, first of all, that NAEP benchmark is high, right? Proficient is a high bar. This is not grade level. Okay. This
But it's
probably
college and career
it's
ready.
Probably
level.
College and career ready level. Right?
That's right.
Okay.
What we're aspiring to.
Well, I don't think we should be aspiring to get 100% of kids to college and career ready. That's crazy. That ain't going to happen, Andy.
Then why do we have Common Core? Why do we have PARC? Why do we have Smarter Balance?
Because we want to tell parents the truth about how their kids are doing. Look, Massachusetts, best state in the country, right, on education, fairly favorable demographics. They get half their kids to college and career readiness. Okay, mm-hmm. If the other states could get that high, that would be a miracle, a huge progress, right? D.C., if we could get a quarter of the kids to college and career readiness, that'd be huge progress. We need to have an honest conversation that we are not going to get 100% of kids to that level. All right.
And so
we've got to figure out then what are the other pathways to the middle class for kids who are not going to be college or career ready by the age of 18. Look, Andy, you know this from the No Child Left Behind years. If we set any standard and try to get 100% of kids to it, we're just going to lower and lower and lower that standard. Right. Now, the question for a place like DC, in my opinion, is are they making gains that are rapid? And could they, looking at the math even, is it mathematically feasible that they could be making stronger gains than they are making today? I'm not sure. I'm not sure that using that proficiency benchmark is the best way to be able to measure that. I think you've got to dig in. Sometimes the state data are easier to look at, or looking at the gains of the scale scores, you can say, look, I mean, they are moving in the right direction, and they're moving in that direction at a fast clip. What more do you want?
Well, if you have not read my piece yet, read it, and then we can have a conversation about it.
I've read it, Andy. I've read it.
So, it brings me no pleasure to like beat up on DCPS. Like, I consider lots of people there my friends, but consider this: everyone considers Boston a great example of a high performing urban district that's been making progress. They've made so much progress. Where has that progress led them? To this year, NAEP TUTA finding an eighth grade. One in five of their low-income eighth graders are proficient.
Right, right.
Progress
right.
Leading to nowhere. Progress is...
Well,
progress.
I, that's where I disagree, Andy, is that the progress meaning that the boys and girls in those cities have a lot higher reading and math skills than their peers did 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. And that's important, right? I mean, even if you're not to that college and career ready level, the assumption is still, you know, let's say graduating from high school at an eighth grade level is a lot better than graduating at a sixth grade level. And that's going to be better for their prospects and better for our country. One last point, Andy, is, you know, you're looking at districts. Don't you think if we had the data on charter schools in these cities, that a lot of those data would look just the same?
Well,
you know?
According to Credo, their last six studies of cities in Boston, in Washington, D.C., in New Orleans, in Newark, New York City, and Indianapolis, they were finding in Boston, for example, charter school kids are learning a year more in reading and math.
But how
year.
Did they know that? Because they looked at progress. They looked at value added. I bet if you look at the NAEP data for those charter schools, it's going to look exactly the same, if not worse. But we'll find out. Okay, that is all the time we've got for this discussion. But don't worry, we're going to talk some more TUTA. We are doing the TUTA two-step, people.
Woo-hoo!
It is now time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I understand we just stole your thunder.
Every piece of my thunder.
But here's the good news, Amber. You know, I have to say, this is going to be our last show of the year, and there's been quite a few times this year when you've gone over a minute. So now you can kind of take some of that time back. You can do Amber's research 10 seconds.
I'm just so stressed out because I had all these findings. I was going to do this thing where we do the positive finding, the less positive finding, because literally there was a ton of spin. Just like Andy said, spin.
Well, do that. Results. Do that. Because
all right, more positive. Okay.
All right.
Let's try it.
Yes.
More positive. Math and reading scores in three districts, Austin, Charlotte, and Hillsborough, were higher in 2013 than for large districts at both grades 4 and 8. Sounds positive, right?
Yeah,
positive.
Yeah, sure.
Hooray.
Not so positive. 9 urbans were lower in both subjects in both grades. Positive?
Yeah.
5 districts had greater gains than the nation from 2003 to 2013 in grade 4, and 3 at grade 8. Not so positive. The rest made no significant gains and 2 saw drops.
Out of 21.
Yes. Positive. Black and Hispanic students in D.C. saw increases from 2011 to 2013 in reading grade 8. L.A. saw increases for these same grades, kids in grades 4 and in math. Not so positive. Average proficiency across all the districts and cities, districts in these cities, is 12%.
There you go again.
Last
with
one.
Your proficiency, guys.
Yeah.
Come on.
Positive. Charlotte, D.C., and Fresno had significant increase in 8th grade math for poor kids since 2 years ago. Not so positive. No city, this is the last finding in Andy's post, no city had significant increases in eighth grade math for white, black, or Hispanic kids.
Wow, that's interesting. All right. Hey,
so
Amber,
spinning,
I know, and I know you think that I've become a big softy on some of these issues. Yeah. You're with Andy on this, huh?
I am.
These
I really
basically,
am.
So the bottom line is, urban school districts still suck.
Well, I mean, but let's give them, I mean, my gosh, 21, we just keep getting more and more participating.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that's huge, right? This is voluntary. There used to be like 5 or 6.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, I guess on the other hand, I'm like, you know, they're willing to get skewered, you know, for this performance. And
But they're not getting skewered.
Well, that's true.
It was a cheerleading session yesterday.
I mean, but maybe that's right. Is that what's going on, right? You participate, so we're not going to make you look but so bad in the media. I mean, I don't know.
There were 21 cities, 4 tests, 84 results. How many positive? 14. 14 out of 84.
All right, now, that's over two years.
That's right, over 2 years.
Right. And that is one thing that I'm frustrated with NAEP about lately is all this focus on what happened since 2 years ago, right? I mean, that's not a lot of time. I mean, both for positive and negative, I'd be more interested in a little bit of a longer stretch of time here. I mean, so I don't know why the obsession on just those two-year
right.
gains either.
Well, they did put out documentation that I was angry about, progress over a decade, so they were looking at that.
Yeah.
They put a lot of stock in the progress over a decade, which you and I disagree about.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's nearly enough.
Yeah. No, and I'm not saying it's enough, mm-hmm. but I am saying positive is better than negative, right? And we see in some places more progress. And look,
Or
you see none. Well, and that's what's important, right?
Right.
I mean, in a place like D.C.
Cleveland going backwards
right,
over
right.
10
no,
years?
No, I hear that. So that's the thing. Look, Cleveland has been pretty much brain dead on education reform until very recently. D.C. has been, you know, going guns a-blazing. And so the fact that you see some significant gains in D.C. and not in Cleveland, I mean, again, we can't be, you know, we don't want to be accused of misnapery here. And Matt Chingos has put out a great post this week about how, you know, we can prove that Christmas is why student achievement is up. And anyways, causation, not correlation, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But look, you know, something's happening in D.C. that's not happening in Cleveland. One hypothesis is it's education reform. Right. I mean, the worry here, Andy, is that, you know, all your Debbie Downer stuff is going to give fuel to people who say, well, you know what Michelle and Kaya are doing aren't working and we shouldn't do it at all. We should just go back to the days when we didn't have any accountability and we didn't have all these reforms. And I think that could be a huge lost opportunity that it looks like it's possible that what's happening in a few cities is meaning much better results for kids.
But I mean, that said, and correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, I thought D.C. still didn't perform better compared to other cities. Large cities. I thought it was they saw performance in themselves from 2 years ago.
Correct. In most of the tests, they are still below the large city average.
Right.
And so, Mike, I take a different slant on this. I think what it shows is after almost 7 years of the two best leaders we could have in a district, Michelle Rhee and Kaya Henderson, after all of their work, Washington, D.C. in eighth grade still has the lowest scale scores mm-hmm. among low-income students. That's after all of the reforms. The urban school district is broken. It cannot be fixed. It must be replaced.
Yes, but you held that view last week, and you'll hold that view next week. I'm not sure that these data necessarily...
So this is a question that I posed you and others. How much more data do you need before you say... enough is enough.
But look, what I want to look at is measuring these things appropriately. And you mentioned before, again, the Credo studies on charter schools. They have given us important information about charter progress. We know now which cities are doing particularly well in charter schools because we look at growth. Okay, and that's the kind of thing we need to look at for urban districts as well. Look, Andy, I'm largely with you. I mean, I understand all the problems of these urban school systems. Okay, I'm not totally convinced that we'd be better off, say, in D.C. with a 100% charter sector rather than, say, a 50% charter sector. I think that there are some benefits that systems could have. Common curriculum, got a very mobile student population, you know, that if you ran a school district well, some of those things could be important. But I keep my mind open to it, but I just don't think that the NAEP data are the right data to use to decide that it's time to give up on the urban district.
Well, let's just remember that Credo found that in charters in D.C., kids learn 100 days more every year in reading and in math.
Yeah.
100 days every single year.
Those data are worth looking at. Now, I suspect that the Credo data find in other cities that the charter schools underperform.
No, in all 6 cities that I named, the charter sector is doing better than the district, usually by 3 months or more per year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there
glass half full or half empty? It's the question.
That is always the question. We will end with that, Andy and Amber. Thank you. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Ooh, same to you guys. You.
And Amber, you'll be back to your full 1 minute allotment
in 2014. And no more stealing of the thunder in 2014.
We couldn't help ourselves.
That's our New Year's resolution. All right. Thanks. That's all the time we've got. Until next year.
I am Andy Smerick.
And I'm Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.